What number is this, Chip?
Episode 6, our look at the monkeys conventions.
Okay, no, I mean, like, don't get excited, man. It's because I'm short, I know.
You're listening to Zilch, a monkeys podcast.
Welcome to your Monkeys Podcast. I'm Ken Mills, and I'm joined by Craig Smith.
Hello there, Ken.
And Jeff Hewlett.
Good evening, gentlemen.
How are you guys doing today?
Not bad.
Doing well, thank you.
Excellent, excellent. We had another great shot at being number one on iTunes Music's New and Notable after Peter Tork shared us again on Facebook, so that was pretty cool. It was nice
awesome.
Being number one again, and thank you to the folks at the Real Peter Tork Facebook page. Thank you so much. Well, we also have a Twitter account.
Tweeters.
We're Tweeters, the monkey tweeter fans and all that.
We don't have any woofers, though.
Yeah, no woofers, just tweeters.
Yeah, well, you can find us on Twitter now, at Zilchcast. You know, feel free to mention us in a tweet, and we'll read your tweets on the air here as we do with our iTunes reviews. We'd love to hear from you on Twitter as well as our Facebook page, so feel free to use both. So that's at Zilchcast.
And our Facebook page is facebook.com/groups/ZilchMonkeysCast. So we hope to see you there, or Twitter universe. And
Twitter sphere?
Twitter sphere.
The woofer sphere.
I like that.
Monkey sphere.
Let's check out Monkey's Mailbag.
P.O. Box 9847.
Here's some of our great ratings from iTunes, and we'd like to thank you all for rating us on iTunes. And as you know, it helps keep us up there on the iTunes charts, so thank you so much. And Jeff Hewlett, why don't you take the first one?
All right, so Gullarillo Barillo, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, gave us a 5-star rating and says, "Thanks for a phenomenal podcast dedicated to a band worthy of such attention. I look forward to hearing more."
That is so cool.
It's awesome.
Craig Smith, will you get the next one, sir?
Let's see. This would be from Mr. Gary Highnote, a 5-star rating. The review is, "I never knew what I was missing. I liked the music, but never realized all the behind-the-scenes neat stuff until you guys came along." That would be the Zilch
you.
Staff.
That would be you,
right?
You guys.
You. Thank you for opening up a new understanding into what I never gave a second thought to. I'm sure that I'm not alone. I also have a new appreciation for Rhino Records, too.
Oh, there you
Which
go.
Is also very, very nice to hear.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Rhino Records has done a fantastic job with the Monkees catalog, and the new Handmade set is supposed to be coming in the fall, correct?
Hopefully so, yeah. I haven't heard anything more about it, but I will definitely be sharing any news that I hear on the
I thought I heard November.
I tend to not keep track of these things until like a track listing's been announced, and then I know that it's kind of in the final stages. So these things tend to change often.
Yes. Speaking of things that may come in November, from what we understand, the Monkees are looking to start touring again around November or December. So
really now?
Yes, that's the insider's rumor that we heard today. So let's kind of be on the lookout for that. So let's hope that's true.
That would be good.
This next one is from the lovely Megan Stemwade. She is indeed a sunny girlfriend. She writes, "Fantastic show. Listening to Zilch is like hanging out with the awesome group of monkey friends you wish you had years ago. Ken and the gang are smart. You guys are the gang, see? It's kind of like Ken and the gang, Cool and the gang, you know.
Spanky's gang.
There you go. We should celebrate good times. Come on." Musical joke there. "Ken and the gang are smart and full of insight and fascinating information that gives depth and context to their discussions. Great music selections and sound clips add so much to the show. I look forward to each new episode. Keep it up." And we plan on doing that. We're having fun, right, guys?
Absolutely, and kudos for your sound clips that you add, by the way.
Oh, well,
thank you. Great job, Ken.
Thank you so much. Todd LeBaron has a question about a couple of the last releases before things ended back in the 70s for the Monkees. Where does Monkees Golden Hits fall into place? He knows it was one of the last Cold Gems LP, and the catalog number was PRS329. Craig Smith, what are your thoughts? Do you have any answers here?
I don't have an exact date for Golden Hits, but this is the information that I do have. You have Instant Replay being released in February of 1969, and then Greatest Hits, the first Greatest Hits, being released in June of 1969. The information that I found that's quoted in Andrew Sandoval's book quotes a Billboard article that states that the album Golden Hits was coming out in April. I don't know if that's, I mean, at that point, maybe it was to be a release that was stock and not, you know, essentially it was, you know, sold through, you know, sending in cereal box tops and whatnot. But the Billboard thing doesn't quite state that. So I don't know if that's exact, but The Monkees Present doesn't come out until October of 1969. So my guess is between Instant Replay and Present, just because Instant Replay is in February, Present is in October. So my guess between those two somewhere. If anybody knows for sure, leave a comment, and I'll add that to the mixography because I don't have a date for the Monkees' Golden Hits.
And Davey Meredith says that it was a post-serial exclusive through Cold Gems and RCA Special Products. It basically covered the cardboard records that the cereal boxes had on their box backs. So
it's absolutely true. My sister had one, and I still own it.
Holy crap. I know what that box back is now.
Yeah, not back like in a box back.
Oh, wow. Yep. Learning as we go, folks. So
there you go.
Todd LeBaron, there you go. There's your answer. And we're going to wrap up this Monkees mailbag with something from Cindy Wittick. I hope I'm saying your name right, dear. She writes in that Zilch has raised her productivity at the office by 25%. So
that's pretty considerable.
Yes, if you want your employees to have a better productivity at work, make them listen to Zilch. So there you go. Today on the show, we are focusing on the Monkees conventions, and Craig Smith, Craig Cohen, and Sarah Clark are going to have a discussion in the latter part of this program where they're going to talk about their Monkees convention experiences. But right now, we have an interview with Jody Blau-Ritson, who is one of the people behind the Monkee conventions. So here we go.
Well, hello, this is Jody Blau-Ritson, producer of the Monkees Convention, and you are listening to Zilch.
So welcome, Jody.
Well, hello there, how are you?
Doing very good, very good. You look lovely today, and we're just glad to have you here on the show.
Thank you, I'm happy to be here.
I'm happy to be anywhere, so tell us a little bit about how you started the Monkee Conventions, and just kind of set the table for us today.
The way that this actually started was I was working with Butch Patrick, who is best known as Eddie Munster on the Munsters.
All of a sudden, I'm hearing that, you know.
Right? It's impossible not to think of that.
Yeah.
And I got a message on Butch's Facebook page from this woman. Her name is Phyllis Paganucci. And this was after Davey passed away. And it said, I'm putting together a Davy Jones Memorial Convention, and I would like you to be a guest. And I was the biggest Monkees fan, so I called Butch, and I said, you're doing this. I don't care if you get paid. You're going to be there. And so I messaged Phyllis, and I said, anything that I can personally do, because I have a lot of contacts and enthusiasm, and I love the Monkees, please let me help you. So from that, a partnership happened. Her and I really took the Memorial Convention for Davey into the stratosphere, and I started booking all the guests for her and doing all the social media. Uh-huh. And it was such a success that both of us said, oh my goodness, we have to do this again. And I was kind of hesitant because we had just done one, and I didn't know if it would be well received. And I didn't know what we could do differently at that point. So we started working on the Brady Bunch convention. Phyllis started getting emails. I started getting emails about doing the Monkees again. And we said, okay, we're going to do both this year, which was such an overwhelming task. So we did the Monkees a year from when the first one was done. A lot of different angles came into play, which worked in our favor. So that's how we got to the second one.
Before we continue to talk about the conventions, I want to take you back in time. I want to take us all back to a time when you found the Monkees. Did you find them as a musical act or a TV show or both or what?
I was, I think, about 12 years old. and the monkeys were coming back on Nickelodeon. Uh-huh. I think it was Nickelodeon or one or MTV had like some kind of a, I guess like a marathon of the monkeys. And a friend of mine said, "Hey, did you ever see this TV show?" And I started having my uncle in Florida because we didn't have cable yet. This was in 1985. Uh-huh. I had him videotape every episode for me. And then it came on regular television, and I have no idea why, but I became, I guess, very interested in the TV show first. And then I guess it was Arista Records. They had re-released for the 20th anniversary a tape of the monkeys, and I just could not stop listening over and over again to the tape. And it was actually the song Valerie, when he does the "Oh yeah, come on." Uh-huh. I would rewind that over and over and over again. And then I was lucky enough to see them in 1986 in Atlantic City. And I just don't know why, but I was known in school as the girl who loved the monkeys, because everybody else was listening to Aerosmith and Skid Row. Uh-huh. And, you know, here I'm obsessed with the monkeys. Their music just was catchy, and they were innocent, and it was just a lot of fun. It made me smile. Their show was great, and they were adorable in 1966, 1967, watching them on TV. Uh-huh. So I got to see them for their 20th anniversary, and then I guess really the obsession started.
Ah. So where did this obsession lead you? Did you start collecting things, buying up all the music you could?
I started getting all the magazines, and then we would cut out all the pictures. And my bedroom walls, which I have on Facebook on the Monkeys Convention page, my walls and ceiling, every little square inch of it was covered in any picture and poster of the monkeys. And then I guess it was... All right, so I saw them again in 1987 because their tour never, like, seemed to end.
Right.
And in 1988, I'll never forget, it was August 8th, 1988, because the date was 8-8-8-8. Oh. And I sat, I heard the monkeys were going to be on 94 WYSP in Philadelphia, and I sat all day and all night because they were going to be at the Mann Music Center that night. And I sat with that big cell phone that they used to have, or cordless phone, not even a cell phone. I sat all day and night. I didn't leave the phone for a second. Heard this, like, noise. I knew it was time to call. It was somewhere around 5 o'clock at night. And I was the second caller, and I got to talk to Mickey and Peter on the phone. Davey wasn't at the studio. Mm-hmm. And I asked... I literally, in my, like, all these years later, I can hear myself going, and I said, "Are you upset that Michael Nesmith is not at the concerts?" And Mickey said, "Are you upset?" And I said, "No, I'm fine. I don't care or not." And he goes, "Well, Michael just couldn't be here." And I just, and my parents were hysterically laughing. It was the funniest thing. And then we saw them that evening. Weird Al opened up for them. Mm-hmm. And then we wound up driving to the PNC Art Center the next day and saw them again the next day. And then I just don't know. Any single time that they came in the area, I was lucky enough. My parents took me up to meet Davey for the first time at the Nittany, I think it was the Nittany Mall in College Town in near Penn State. And I met Davey and got his autograph. He was the first guy, the first monkey I ever met. Oh. And it started from there. And I never have ever, since 1985, have been interested in another group. I never stopped loving this group. It just has always been something that was reminded me of my childhood. Uh-huh. My husband, who I grew up with, we went to school together. And so he knew that this was something I was obsessed with. And so he, by default, has gotten interested in the monkeys and likes their music. And my kids, who are, two of them are 19 and 20, I've gotten them interested. And they, because they're into music, actually have found that the ones that they play on the radio are not the songs they gravitate to. They kind of like the more obscure stuff that Nesmith wrote, and find it to be stuff that just is amazing that it wasn't ever played on the radio because they think he's a genius. There's something about the crowd at the Monkees, the fans, that you just somehow, I don't know what it is, but you feel like you're at home. And it's something that I really couldn't explain to a non-Monkees fan, but when you are with these people, there's something very peaceful and you just kind of gravitate towards each other. So it's like a family instead of just fans.
Now, you mentioned that you're doing a Brady convention. Now, kind of tell us who's going to be there.
What happened was when we did the Davy Jones Memorial, we wanted to have a celebration of his life. And so one of the things that I did was reach out to the Brady Bunch cast members, since Davy, and this was not a Monkees convention. So right. Technically, the first Monkees convention was the one we just had. This was more about Davy. And so I had gotten Barry Williams, Christopher Knight, Susan Olsen, and Mike Lookinland to come to this event. And because they liked the fact that we were not from Hollywood, I treated everybody with respect. Mm-hmm. They really liked me, and they thought, wow, you need to do a Brady Bunch convention. It's never been done. So that was like this is the sequel to the Davy Jones Memorial Convention. And so at this one, we're at the same hotel in New Jersey. It used to be the Sheraton, but now it's the Hilton Meadowlands. It's going to be August 15th, 16th, and 17th of 2014. So it's coming up. And this has been in the works for a year now. Ever since the Davy Jones convention, this has been something that we have been working on. And so, unfortunately, on June 1st, we lost Alice Ambi Davis. And so, because we were familiar with how to handle a memorial convention, and we did it with such grace and respect to the family, because she passed away, I went to all the cast members and I said, listen, I said, you guys know I know what I'm doing here, and I'll treat this with the same respect that I did with Davy Jones. They all agreed that what we're going to do on Friday, August 15th, is that we're going to celebrate Ambi Davis's life. It's not going to be a memorial where everyone's going to sit and cry and we're going to blow out candles and all that stuff. We're going to have all the original cast members, including Sherwood Schwartz's kids, who are Hope and Lloyd Schwartz, on the stage talking about and answering questions never discussed before about Ambi Davis off of the set of the Brady Bunch, how she was a mentor, little things about her. Barry Williams tells a funny story that though she was the maid, she didn't know how to boil water. You know, she didn't know how to cook. We're going to have autographs. We're going to have pictures, meet and greets, all that fun stuff. And then Barry, when we had the Davy Jones Memorial, I asked Barry, I said, you got to do me a favor. Can you do Sunshine Day and teach the audience the dances?
Yeah.
And it was so much fun. And he had so much fun that Barry's going to do his full Brady Bunch show, doing all the Brady Bunch songs on Saturday, August 16th in the evening. He's going to do, you know, Keep On Moving, Sunshine Day. He's going to turn into his alter ego, Johnny Bravo.
Johnny Bravo.
It's good. And there's going to be a huge panel discussion, a huge Q&A with all the Brady Bunch cast. And then on Sunday, we have the cast of the Brady Bunch movie, because they're celebrating the 20th anniversary of the movie this year. It's a big mm-hmm. year for this Brady Bunch thing.
Right.
And so we're going to have the cast of the Brady Bunch movie talking about what it was like to portray, you know, America's most loved family, one of the top 10 most remembered families on television, and what it was like transforming themselves into the characters that we all fell in love with for the past 40 years. It's going to be really fun. It's going to be interesting. We're going to have trivia. We're going to have a huge disco blowout Sunday at 4 o'clock with this group called Disco Unlimited, fog machines and the lights and the craziness and all 70s music, all dancing. We are having people dress up in costume. We're encouraging, pull out your bell bottoms and your platform shoes, because it's going to be a blast. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's funny how the Monkees, if you remember, also were in the Brady Bunch movie.
Yes.
So I remember going to the 9 o'clock showing of the Brady Bunch movie, and it was a sellout when this came out. It was a sellout. Uh-huh. And I'm sitting there. It was my mom and my dad and my husband and myself, and I'm sitting next to strangers because every seat's taken. I had no idea that the monkeys were in the movie. I had no idea Davy was going to be doing girl in the movie. When I saw Davy come out, I kid you not, I stood up in the movie theater like this goofball, screaming at the top of my lungs. And then when they were the judges in the contest, and the three of them were there, don't even ask. I grabbed the lady next to me, her arm, and I was ridiculous, and my family was mortified. But I thought the movie was absolutely hilarious. I thought it was spot on. I thought those characters that they played were spot on.
Well, as a matter of fact, you mentioned that performance of Girl from the movies. I'm going to play some of that right now. This is a almost heavy metal or grunge version of Girl, and if you haven't seen the movie, you should check it out. It's actually on Netflix, folks, so if you have Netflix, look it up, the Brady Bunch movie. Here's Davey doing a grungy version of Girl.
Can I have your attention, please? I have some news that's going to make everyone flip. I thought he might show up, but I didn't want to get all your hopes up. But here he is, Davy Jones! Thanks a lot for being here, Davy. I mean, Mr. Jones.
Anything for my number one fan.
Up.
So when is the convention for the Bradys?
The Brady Bunch convention is August 15th, 16th, and 17th at the Hilton Meadowlands in East Rutherford, New Jersey. It's or Secaucus. It depends what side of the bridge you live on. It's only about 20 minutes from New York. It's an hour from Philadelphia. And it's very convenient. We have hotel rooms reserved. So there's a block of discounted rooms for the Brady Bunch. And it's going to be an entire weekend. But the goal of this weekend is to celebrate, have a great time. It's a family event. You can bring your kids and you can meet all the Bradys on the Brady Bunch website. It's called BradyBunchConvention.com. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
Are you going to do anything about the Davy episode? You can't, as a Monkey fan, not have a Brady convention and not celebrate the Davy episode.
We are going to do our best to pay respect to that episode because
it is,
if you Google it, it's one of the most loved cameo appearances.
Right.
And Lloyd Schwartz was on set because he was also a producer, Sherwood Schwartz's son. He was on set when that show was done, when that particular episode. So he's going to tell us stories that we wouldn't know about Davy on the set
right.
of the Brady Bunch. I'm very excited.
It's going to be fun. Come on out and have a good time. And I think that there was a record broke in that episode, the amount of times the word Davy was said in a like 20-minute period or something like that. If you watch that episode, the girls are always, Davy. It's just, you know, someone should make a YouTube clip and just put them all together.
You know, it's hilarious because when he redid the song Girl for the movie, you know, he looked just as good and he fit in perfectly. And it was, to me, one of the highlights of that movie.
The Marcia character in the Brady Bunch movie, she seems to be the only person in the world that cares about Davy Jones because everybody else is into grunge and everything.
Right.
And he comes up on stage and they all start doing that dance that she did in the series.
The Axl Rose dance.
Yeah, the Axl Rose dance. And then all the teachers realize that it's the Davy Jones and they all come over and swoon and they undo their cleavages and everything. And
Hi! That's the album my manager promised you.
Oh, thanks. But how did you...
I heard what you said over the studio microphone.
Oh. Oh, this is my mom. This is my dad.
I'm his father.
You know what just meant.
Well, would you two excuse us?
Yeah, we were just going in the other room.
Is it all right if I sit down?
Oh, yes. Sit down. Anywhere.
Anywhere.
Yeah, anywhere.
You know, I'm sorry about the mess that you're in because of that letter I wrote to you.
Oh, no. It's my fault. I never should have promised I'd get you to sing at the prom.
Well, it's my fault, too. I promised you something in that letter. When is your prom?
Friday night.
Okay, Friday night it is.
Yay!
I didn't know we had an audience.
Those are my brothers and sisters. You really come to the prom?
Well, there is one little problem.
What?
Well, I don't have a date. Do you know a girl that would like to go with me?
Do I?
Well, how about the flip side?
Then and Now Events present the Brady Bunch Convention, August 15th, 16th, and 17th. Join the Bradys for the grooviest convention to hit the East Coast. Cast members from the TV show, the movie, specials, and more. The biggest Brady event ever. See Barry Williams, Johnny Bravo it up live as he performs all the hits from the TV show. Not to be missed. At the Hilton Meadowlands, East Rutherford, New Jersey. August 15th, 16th, and 17th. For a complete list of guests and info, check out www.BradyBunchConvention.com. And remember, have a sunshine day. Let's go back to the monkey conventions, which are you going to do another one this year, this coming year?
Oh, we're working on it. The 50th anniversary is coming up, and it's already been approached to Mickey and Peter and Nez. And I just sent another email because to his company, we don't want to do it without the three of them on board. because it is such an undertaking, and it is a financial investment for us, and it's a very scary one at that. And so we're waiting to find out when their schedules break, if they're interested, but it is something that Phyllis and I do discuss probably twice a week at this point, because we are now expected to do it. We had backing from, not financial backing, let me make this clear, but we had permission from Rhino Records, which is a huge deal. Mm-hmm. They gave us carte blanche, which is That's the what everybody looks for in permission, you know, to be able to use their logos and use their stuff. So Rhino Records backed us on a professional level because they liked what we were doing. So yeah, it is something that we're currently in the works talking about, and you know where it's going to be. But we're just waiting on the guys to find out. I know they just got off tour. They probably don't even want to hear the name Monkees right now. Right, so. Right. You know, we're going to give it a little bit of time. I'm going to try and concentrate the next couple months on this Brady convention. And then, God help Mickey, Peter, and Mike, because I'm coming at them strong again. You don't know. I was trying to get Nesmith on board for this. I'll tell you something. I paced 10 pounds off. I just walked from room to room pacing, you know, praying that I would be the one to get him. And when I got that phone call that he was going to do it, I kid you not, I screamed like a 12-year-old girl. I was back in my house again. I screamed so loud, I'm running around the house. I mean, I'm 39 years old, and my kids are looking at me like, what the hell's wrong with you, you know? But it was such a personal accomplishment for me, professionally and personally, but more personally, because I take this stuff personally. It's not, I don't make money yet on any of this. So for me to hang out, you know, and with the three of them, you couldn't even ask for something better for me.
Right. Now, you had some really cool merchandise that you had, different shirts that said different things. For example, there was a Michael Nesmith-themed shirt, and it said...
Mesmerized.
And then you had a Mickey one that said...
It said Dolanzed.
And, go on.
Peter, his was Torqued. And then Davies was Jonesin.
And they're similar to
Idea. I had no idea until my 19-year-old said to me, he's like, that's a cool shirt because that has another meaning. Mm-hmm. But the reason I was, one day, we were playing around with names, and what happened was I said something about Mesmerized, and I said, oh my God, that would be amazing logo on a t-shirt. And I made a mock-up of it. And then I said, because we're not allowed to use, nobody's allowed to actually, like, make money off of the Monkees logo.
Right.
So I got around that because I had the piano player and backup singer who's been with the Monkees in all aspects, the Monkees with Mickey and with Davey on their solo tours, Dave Alexander. His wife, Jen Alexander, is an artist. And I made these drawings of the guitar. I mean, I'm not an artist. I made these guitar drawings and made them inside the logo of a Monkees logo, and I did Mesmerized, or I did Dolanzed. And this way I wouldn't owe anybody anything.
Right.
And I texted the mock-up pictures to Jen, and I said, can you do this? And then the reason I did the Mesmerized one that you see is silver, and it's the Hunter Green, because now Nesmith is wearing those Jimmy Choo silver shoes.
Yes.
And then the Hunter Green for his hat. And then if you see, instead of the little hearts, it's little Jimmy Choo shoes.
Yeah.
But so with Dolanzed, we did drumsticks. With Peter, with Torqued, we did the banjos, and we did Bluebirds with the Jonesen shirt. And I couldn't believe what she did with the, you know, the drawings that I did. But I don't sleep at night. I'm very creative in my mind. And I was, you know, so to see it come to fruition was incredible. And then the other things that I had put together was the logo, Keep Calm and Listen to the Monkees.
Mm-hmm.
Because that Keep Calm thing seems to be
something really big
everybody has embraced. Mm-hmm. And so one day I'm saying to Phyllis, I have an idea. I said, because like the Monkees, to me, when I listen to it, I relax. And I go, how about this? And I went on the website, I created Keep Calm and Listen to the Monkees. And we put that on the tumblers, and we put that on the tote bags. And it went over extremely well. It really did. And it was a lot of fun. You know, as soon as I saw Mickey, we were invited up to Mickey's room to have drinks with him. And I took a tumbler up to him and I said, "Here you go. This is yours for the weekend." He's like, "Oh my God, that's so neat." And the reason that I wanted to do their last names was because we had all the Dolan's daughters there. And we had the Nesmith kids there. And I was like, this way, Christian, he can wear it. And Jonathan can wear this shirt because they're Nesmiths, too.
Yeah, they're mesmerized as well. So
exactly. And it's funny because Nesmith loved the logo. He thought it was just like the coolest thing ever. So we made him proud. That was something I was really nervous about because he does have the first thing everybody asks is, what is he like? Because, you know, is he really a control freak? Is he really this? Is he really that? Did he hate Davy Jones? You know, like every dumb question in the world. And so I was petrified. I mean, petrified, because now I'm working with him, but I have to be professional.
Right.
And also I'm like the biggest fan. So I'm standing there drooling at the mouth, you know, uh-huh. And he wound up to be just unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. I have not one negative bad thing to say. The guy did everything that we asked of him. He was a sweetheart. He really was. And I cannot wait to work with him again. And you know something? He's very smart.
Let me ask you one question about each one of the guys. What's one thing that you've learned from working with them about each one of the three that you've worked with? What's one thing that you've learned?
Let's start with Davey. I met Davey many times. Uh-huh. He was always very, very nice. Very nice. I hired Davey, which was like a huge dream of mine, for an event. And we agreed to the terms. The money was sent. I had the contract and all this stuff. And it was supposed to be for April 2 years ago. I believe 2 years ago. April 2012. And Butch Patrick, who I told you was my first friend in the entertainment business, Butch was at the Hollywood show. This was February 19th, I think it was, of 2012. And so Butch called me. I was seeing Star Wars with my son and my husband. I had to take this little girl to the bathroom. I get this phone call from Butch, and I'm like, "Hello, what do you want? You know, I'm seeing Star Wars." And he goes, "I have somebody that wants to talk to you." And I'm like, "Butch, really, can you just give me, I'm seeing Star Wars. I have a little girl. She's in the bathroom." I hear, "Hello, love. It's Davey." And I'm like, "Oh, my God." He goes, "I'm working with you in a couple weeks. I can't wait to come down and see you. Blah, 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 blah." And I'm freaking out in the bathroom with this little girl. I'm literally, I mean, toilets are flushing. And I'm talking to Davey. And I hang up with them, and I'm in the lobby. I'm going absolutely nuts. And it was all over Facebook that I was working with Davey and I had this event. I get a phone call. I'm on my way to New York at 8 o'clock in the morning, and TMZ called, and they go, "Jody, we need you to confirm that Davey passed away February 29th. And I go, "What?" I said, "That is absolutely not true." I said, do not print that. It's a hoax. February 29th, it made total sense. That's not true. They go, "Jody, we have reason to believe that Davey had a heart attack and died." And I pull over somewhere in New York, and I'm calling his agent, and I can't get through because it's California. So it's like 5 o'clock in the morning. I call enough times that his agent picks up the phone, and he's like, "What's up?" And I said, "I'm getting this call from TMZ that Davey passed away. What the hell is going on?" He goes, "That's not true. You tell them, don't you dare print that. We'll sue them, blah, blah, blah." He goes, "I'll call you back. I'm going to call Jessica now," his wife. And in the meantime, I get back in my car. I'm driving. I'm having everybody Google this. We see nothing. And I get to my friend's office. I'm literally pacing, hysterically crying on the phone. And I get a call from TMZ. And it's Harvey Levine and this guy Ryan who works there. And they go, "Listen, I don't really want to be the one to tell you this, but the coroner confirmed that Davey died, and we're going live with this at 12 o'clock. And I said, "Wait a second. You can't do that. That's not true." Then his agent called, and his agent finally got a hold of Jessica, and obviously we found out that it was true. So I never actually got to work professionally with Davey, and, you know, by a couple months. So that was a pretty big blow professionally and personally. You know, I had to drive home to New Jersey that night listening to Mickey on CNN. You know, I think he was on, I don't know if it was the Larry or Pierce Morgan, and I heard it, and I drove home hysterical. I don't think I've ever cried that much. So that was my working experience that got cut short with Davey. As far as Peter goes, I did get to work with Peter a couple times.
He knows too much.
Thank you.
He's a really nice guy. He just sometimes will just get up and start like dancing around, and he's just a really nice guy. I talked to him about his family. I talked to him about, I think his daughter's a principal and he's got some grandchildren, and he's a very down-to-earth guy. You know, he told me that he was a teacher, and after the monkeys, he was middle class, just a middle class guy living a middle class life. So he was really great. What I learned about Mickey was always my hero. I mean, I have pictures with Mickey since 1986. I swore I was going to marry him. I told my husband when we got married, if I ever had the opportunity to leave him for Mickey Dolenz, consider it a done deal.
Well, you know what? You would have to fight my wife for that, too, because she's a monkey girl from way back. I don't know. It's hard to live in Mickey's shadow. That's all I can tell you.
Careful! I may never play the guitar again.
But you're the drummer.
Oh, that's right. Okay, go ahead.
You know what? He is a nonstop worker.
Mm-hmm.
He is a family guy. I mean, he is a consummate professional. I'll tell you, Mickey came up to me. I'm not going to say any bad words. But Mickey came up to me. I offered him water. I said, you know, and every time I approach Mickey, I've met him 100 times. Uh-huh. I've been in his hotel room professionally with his wife, and Don is amazing. And I've been out to dinner with him and at a bar. And, you know, every time I approach him, I'm still 12. And I still have a crush on him, even though he's like 70 years old. And I said, Mickey, you want a bottle of water? And he goes, come here. And I go, what? And he goes, what's in that? And I said, what are you talking about? He goes, what's in that bottle? I said, water? And I was like, what is he talking about? And he goes, do you know what fish do in water? And you can imagine where the conversation went with that. And I busted out hysterically laughing. I'm like, oh my God, Mickey said the F word. I mean, I was, you know, I'm 12 years old and monkeys don't curse, you know? So I couldn't get over that.
So that's what it's all about.
Yeah. It's pretty scary.
You know what's even more scary?
What?
You can't say on television.
We were drinking at the bar, and I don't know what happened. I guess a conversation was going on, and I was in outer space because I can't mentally deal with the fact that I'm hanging out with Mickey.
Right.
And he comes down to my level because he's 6 feet tall and I'm 4'11". And he comes and he's looking directly into my face, into my eyes. I kissed him on the mouth in front of his wife, in front of everyone. I mean, like, how many people haven't, you know? But everyone busting out laughing at me, and I'm like, what did I do wrong? I thought we were celebrating. And he was looking to see if I was drunk or something. I don't know what the hell. I still to this day don't know, but everybody was laughing at me. So Mickey is really, when his whole family was there at the Monkees convention, he hadn't been with his entire family, with all the kids, Amy included, for 2.5 years because they live in California. His one daughter, Emily, lives in Washington. Charlotte lives in Washington. Amy lives in California. So he wasn't with all his kids and Coco and everybody else. And he's like, I'm just celebrating to be with my family. He's like, anytime I'm not signing autographs, I'm with my family. He's just a sweet guy with Nesmith.
The modest but towering Texan needs no introduction.
I mean, you know, that's just an overwhelming, mentally, it's an overwhelming experience because it, when you close your eyes, even though he's 70 and he's balding and you know, when you close your eyes, you hear him from the show.
Mm-hmm.
And it's surreal. That's the only thing I can say. It's surreal. And he's very quiet. and reserved, and he thinks before he speaks, and he's just a very nice guy, and I mean, Mickey's just my favorite anyway. I love hanging out with him, but all of them are gentlemen, and I told his assistant, Jessica, I said, if at any time during the weekend you see me and all three guys are in the same room as me, or I have a picture with the three of them, I said, I want you to know that I'm a 12-year-old girl that is hysterical inside because I can't act that way.
Right.
And we were in the audit, we were in the picture room, and Mickey and Peter and Mike are all sitting there, and I'm standing there by myself. And I just, I mean, I was like in outer space. And they just, I mean, they're real guys. It's the weirdest thing. It's real guys. And I did have the opportunity to introduce them on stage because they received, for the Pop Music Hall of Fame, they received their induction plaques.
Ladies and gentlemen, once again, Miss Joni Brinson, let's hear it.
Me is looking for something right now, Phyllis. Welcome to the best Monkees convention that we have had thus far.
More votes than the Beatles. More votes, in fact, than any other nominee ever for America's Pop Music Hall of Fame. Day of March 2014, we are honored, proud, and extremely thrilled to present Mickey Dolenz, Davy Jones, Mike Nesmith, and Peter Tork as both collectively and individual inductees into America's Pop Music Hall of Fame.
Since I'm 12 years old, I have the opportunity to introduce Mickey Dolenz, Mike Nesmith, and Peter Tork. And I'll tell you something, if you could do anything to me, I could die tomorrow. And that was exactly what I am excited about in my life professionally. There's not one thing. I don't need to meet the president. I don't need anything else. This was it.
Yeah, but the president doesn't do a good job with Pleasant Valley Sunday. None of them.
Yeah, right. There is nothing anybody in this planet can do that could take that moment away from me. What makes me most happy, honestly, is people walking out of the rooms hysterically crying because they just got to meet somebody, and I know that I have something to do with that. And the hugs and the thank yous. It really is just such an accomplishment to be able to make people happy.
Well, when you think about it, the idea of actually meeting Mike Nesmith in particular, I mean, there had been opportunities to meet the wonderful Peter Tork and the fantastic Mickey Dolenz, but Mike was always like the mystery card, if you will. The one that you didn't know if you were ever going to see again. And you kind of helped make it possible for some people to have a dream of a lifetime come true.
You know? And the thing is that I am, you know, there's a lot of business people out there that do not care. And the one difference between myself and everybody else is that every single email I respond to, every Facebook post I respond to, every single person is important to me. And I treat every single person as if, listen, you're spending a lot of money. And I understand that. And I understand where everybody's coming from. And that's one thing I never want to lose about myself is that I honestly care about every single person getting what I have gotten out of it. And I appreciate each and every person who flew from all over the world and trusted me to give them their money's worth and to make something happen for them. And I felt obligated, honestly, when everybody said that they wanted to meet Mike Nesmith, and I would say to Phyllis, I'm getting him. And everybody said, you'll have a better chance of pulling the Titanic up than getting Mike Nesmith. And I knew for a month that I had him coming. And to not be able to tell anybody, honestly was the hardest month of my life because you're never going to do it. And Mike trusted me and his family trusted me. All his kids were there. Only Jason wasn't there because he was out of town.
Right.
But his whole family and Mickey's whole family, they all trusted me. And it was a wonderful event. And I did not get one person that was unhappy with their experience. The monkeys absolutely are 100% fan oriented. They make sure that their fans are happy. They make sure they spend time with their fans. I was actually very surprised because I thought Nesmith was going to be like an autograph and then shuffle off to the next person. He was so impressed with so many of the things people brought that he'd never seen, or merchandise or fan stuff that he hadn't seen or pictures in 40 years. He would spend time, like, actually analyzing. There was one guy who made a monkey's guitar that was shaped as the monkey guitar. Nesmith must have spent 15 minutes. Uh-huh. And I know his agent was like, you know, move on to the next person because the lines were so crazy. He's every one of them doing selfies with them. They all take time. I mean, Peter, he'll take, if you're getting your Gretsch sign, Peter stands there and plays your guitar. They understand that their fans are what kept them alive all these years. Mm-hmm. So they really are 100% fan-oriented in every decision that they make.
I'm going to ask you this question. Will there be another convention?
There's going to be another Monkees convention. Okay. Well, in my heart and in my mind, there's going to be another Monkees convention. Everything has to fall into place because at this point, I'm more excited about seeing my friends that I've met through Facebook and through the conventions than I am the guys themselves, sort of like Beatlefest, never had a Beatle. I'll tell you something. If I have my way, the fans know, and they should trust me by now, I ain't over. It's not over till the fat lady sings, and we are going to have another Monkees convention if I have to go and pick Nesmith, Mickey, and Peter up myself. I'm not done with that yet. I've come too far. We have the 50th anniversary, and if anybody's going to celebrate it, it's going to be us.
Well, you heard it here today, folks. And, of course, Zilch may wind up there. One of us might show up, so we'll hopefully be there to report. You know, one of us will probably be there, so that'll be fantastic. What do you think about there finally being a Monkees podcast?
I think it's about time. I think the Monkees should have their own station on Sirius, to be honest with you.
I agree.
I think that.
And we would gladly host it for them.
The Monkees, absolutely. Not just the Monkees alone, but the influences. I think it's about time. You don't really think about it, but like, you're sitting next to Mickey Dolenz, and like, here's the guy who was hanging out with Jimi Hendrix. Mm-hmm. You know, he was hanging out with the Beatles. Like, I mean, touching him, he was with all those people. The Monkees should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It is the Monkees. The Monkees, there wouldn't be videos if it wasn't for the Monkees. Mm-hmm. And the fact is that we're celebrating the best video and all these, you know, Grammy Awards and the American Music Awards. Nobody has ever acknowledged that Michael Nesmith or that the Monkees, the whole show was little mini videos. It's never been brought up. And what really annoyed me is that I just watched the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, this last induction, and Linda Ronstadt was not there, but she was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And they had different women that were speaking about her and doing her songs. They say flat out that she got discovered, where her big break was Different Drum. And Carrie Underwood sang Different Drum. They must have brought up Different Drum 10 times.
And it's sad because Mike's song can be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but Mike
can't. He wrote the song. Not one time did anybody credit the songwriter. That Mike Nesmith, there's an episode of The Monkees, but he presented Don Kushner with Different Drum. And in one of the episodes, he does sing with the guitar real fast. I hear the beat of a different drum.
Billy Roy Hofstetter.
Mr. Hack. You know, I travel to the beat of a different drum. Can't you tell by the way I run every time you make eyes at me? You cry and moan and say, we'll work it out, but honey, child, I've got my doubts. You can't see the forest for the trees. Don't get me wrong. Goodbye, I'm a little dream won't live a lot longer if you live without me.
Thank you, Billy Roy.
Mike Nesmith was the original person who sang it on the Monkees. He gave it to Linda Ronstadt. It became a hit. It put her on the map. But once again, another Monkee that did not get the credit where credit is due. When the Monkees changed the way television looks, they changed the way we listen to music. They deserve more respect than they have ever been given before. And it's a shame because before another one of them goes, but you know, because obviously they're older, time is not on everybody's side.
Right.
They should be alive to see them get the professional respect. They have the personal respect, but the professional business respect is what they deserve, because Mickey Dolenz has one of the best voices in out there, period.
And Peter Tork's musicianship is off the charts. He's just so much that they're all capable of. It's just absolutely amazing. And if there's going to be a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I said this about Kiss, I said this about Alice Cooper, I'll say this about anybody. If there's a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, it should be about the people and what they love. And as far as I can tell, a heck of a lot of people love the Monkees.
They absolutely do. There's nothing like them. And there's nothing like Monkees fans. And we're thrilled that they finally have a podcast out there so that all of us can share our special, you know, our special stories. Because You know something? The stories are what make you smile, you know?
That's right. Well, I want to thank you for being on the show today. And Jody, I want to thank you for being a friend to the podcast, to the Zilch podcast, and you've treated me very well. And I just want to put that on record, and I want you to know I appreciate you.
Oh, listen, Ken, anybody that loves the Monkees, I love them. We have something in common right off the bat, and I wish you all the luck in the world, and anything Monkee related, you know where to go. I'm the Monkee girl.
Okay. Well, we plan on doing some work with you as a podcast, and we want to do some stuff going forward. And any announcements you have to make, let us know, and we'll even make a commercial to run on our show, because we believe in the Monkees Convention. It's a gathering of the tribe.
That's
and
right.
It's a tribe of monkeys. You know, here we come. All right. Well, thank you for being on the show today, and God bless.
Ken, I wish you the best of luck, and I cannot wait. We're going to get some great guests on, all monkey-related for you.
Oh, fantastic.
When you walk out to the lobby and there are, like, hundreds of people singing an acoustic rendition of Shorty Blackwell, there's no sleep to be had.
You're like, where am I?
Meanwhile, I was like, this is, like, every dream I've ever had.
Right.
All right, I'm almost ready to go, guys.
All right, and don't mention Larry Storch.
Is there a story behind that?
Apparently there was, yeah.
Oh.
He wanted a picture taken with them, and they said no.
Well, how do you say no to Larry Storch?
Because pictures were $370.
If you wanted all three of them in the shot, yeah, it was.
Gildy, that was the most expensive Facebook cover photo I've ever taken.
Yeah. In 3, 2, 1, welcome back to Zilch. I'm Craig Cohen, and I have with me Sarah Clark.
Hello, everybody.
And Craig Smith.
Howdy, y'all.
So, guys, this is funny. For the last 2 years now, here in New Jersey, where I live, they've done an official Monkees convention that I have not been able to attend. You guys are out of state, and you were both able to find your way to East Rutherford, New Jersey, back in March, the 14th, 15th, and 16th for the convention. Sarah, do you want to tell us how you ended up at the convention?
I had not intended to go because I had just spent a somewhat embarrassing amount of money over the last couple of years going to two Monkees concerts, two solo Michael Nesmith concerts, and a conversation reception. So it's like, okay, that's it, I'm done. Especially because for the longest time, they hadn't actually announced any Monkees that were going to the convention. But then Mickey was going. And then, of course, Nez decided to go. And then Peter decided that he was coming in for a couple of days. But what really clinched it for me was not just the chance to see them, and in some cases see them again. It was that so many of my friends were going. And there's just something about, especially when, I wouldn't quite call Oklahoma flyover country, but it kind of is. And there are many, many Monkees friends I have who I only know through the internet. And it was a wonderful chance to get to touch base and meet with them. And we got to hang out and make a lot of great memories.
Excellent. Excellent. And Craig, how did you find your way there?
I'd always regretted not going to the Monkees conventions in the 80s. I went to my first Beatle Fest in 87 when I was 14, and they were having Monkees conventions around that same time. And the last year I did not go to, I've met Mickey and Peter several times. So for me, the cost of a convention ticket wasn't really worth, you know, going there. And it wasn't until after, where I heard about the vendor room and all that kind of stuff, that I was like, you know, I probably should have gone to that. The thing that clinched it was when I found out that Michael Nesmith was going to be there. I saw his first solo tour when he came around, but I did not get a chance to do a conversation reception and didn't get to see him the second time he came around at all. So for me, it was that, and then visiting the website and trying to suss out how things were going to work with pictures and autographs. And basically the reason that I went was because I thought that this might be my last chance to meet Nesmith.
Sure, sure. So it was a three-day event, and were the 3 days pretty much the same thing over the course of that 3 days, or was it one long schedule that ran the entire weekend?
I mean, there were repeating things. It was a long mm-hmm. schedule, but each day, like, there would be a Mickey signing period and a Mike signing period and a picture period and, you know, those sorts of things. So you had to kind of figure out when you wanted to do those things, because ultimately they would overlap with shows going on in the ballroom. Like, I missed seeing Jonathan and Jessica Nesmith because there was something going on that mm-hmm. I was in line for. So in terms of things like that, yeah, it was, you kind of had to look at the schedule and pick the best times to do things.
Mm-hmm. And how was this laid out? I know you talked about a vendor area, which we'll talk about, but in terms of the convention itself, I've been to a lot of conventions here. I go to the Kiss Expo that they have over in Edison, and I go to another one called Chiller Theater and Monster Mania over in Cherry Hill. And those, they sort of just throw all the celebrities in one room and vendors in another. Is that sort of how the Monkees convention's laid out?
They were in three separate rooms, as I recall. I don't know about the photos because I didn't do any of the photos, but for autographs, they were in separate rooms, but then the vendors were in a different room as well. They had their own space. So mm-hmm.
Now, were there anybody, aside from Mike, Mickey, and Peter, that you could get autographs from?
Oh, yeah, everybody in the vendor room. And May Pang was there, Butch Patrick. There were tons. All of the Dolan's kids and most of Nesmith's kids were there as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, and all approachable. I mean, most of them charged for an autograph or charged for something that you could get autographed. But everybody in there was pretty approachable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Most approachable, I have to say, Cersei Link and Christian Nesmith.
Yes.
Who were just absolutely great. All of the Nesmith and Dolan's kids were, really. They mm-hmm. were all very approachable and all very,
yeah,
all very sweet and
yeah.
kind.
Yeah, I was struck by that, too, because it's like, as a 80s era fan, as I think you mentioned you are too, I'm actually not all that, I mean, I'm of an age sort of some of Mickey's kids, certainly. And so I think to myself, you know, how would I be able to cope with it if my dad were, you know, a rock star and I was going to these conventions and all these, you know, people who are my age are running around crushing over my father? And
yeah.
I don't know if I could handle it nearly as well as they do, but all of them that I got to talk to were very gracious and friendly. I had a great conversation with Christian, and of course, as you mentioned, Cersei Link is just a sweet person, and had a great conversation with Emily Dolenz, too. I've purchased one of her photos, and she's just a talented artist. Really, all of them are very talented in their own ways, and I thought it was a good chance for them to kind of spotlight what they've been able to, what they do kind of, you know, beyond just being the kid of somebody famous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty neat. And I think it speaks to their abilities as parents to raise kids while being public figures that were able to be gracious and humble and appreciative of what they have, which that's really neat to hear.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk a little bit about the schedule before we get to the vendor room some more. So in addition to the signings and the photo opportunities, were there Q&A sessions or any other kind of events that were built in?
Oh yeah, there were there were several Q&As throughout the course of the convention. Mickey had one, Michael had one, Andrew Sandoval and Bobby Hart had one. All of the Nesmith kids together, which I missed. I did see all of the Dolan's kids, which was great. Did you see that one?
No, I didn't get to see any of the kids' Q&A's panel. So what was, I am curious, what was the Dolan's kids one like?
It was interesting because they were asked by, you know, one of the more overzealous fans in the audience, what does it take to get a date with you?
Oh my God.
And which was slightly embarrassing, but they started talking about bringing guys home to meet their dad.
Dating. When you had to bring the guy home, you know, whoever you were dating home to dad or, you know, to meet him. How was that? What kind of experience did those guys go through, or did they even know who your dad was?
Well, for us English girls, dad lived 15-hour plane flight away. So yeah. You were like, hey, dad, we're going on a date. And he was like, okay, don't go. I'll be there in 24 hours. As English people, we didn't really grow up, but Dad, and he said this on stage, I mean, he knows that he trusts that we know what we're doing.
Yeah.
And then he's just like a regular father. He wants us to be happy and taken care of. And
I think he likes to play the dad that's,
but he's,
you know,
not
gonna
like
ask
that.
Those questions, but yeah. I think in his head he's like, ooh, a new buddy, great.
Yeah. It was easy going.
Yeah, and I think, Dad's always been sort of, like any dad, you know, protective, but also encouraging and everything. And I think one of his sort of dad joke lines or whatever, and he'd be like, oh, you know, four daughters, Mickey, you know, how are you going to handle that? You know, four daughters, aren't you worried about them? And he's like, no, I'm not worried about the girls, I'm worried about the guys. So I think he feels sorry for the ones that have gone.
My boyfriend's here today, so then I'll ask him that question. What's my dad like? I don't know.
And I think if you break one of our hearts, he refuses to say their name anymore. I don't think he says an ex-boyfriend's name. He refuses.
I think you're right, actually.
Yeah, he refuses to say their name.
That's
funny.
Andy owns guns.
Exactly.
For as much as I see Mickey as kind of like a goofy guy and things like that, I can also see him as maybe a little bit standoffish at times. I've seen him during like autograph signings where he seemed a little distant, and that I don't say that in mm-hmm. a mean way. You know, it's just kind of his demeanor sometimes.
Yeah.
But they talked about how he, you know, kind of tries to like take the guy under his wing and like talk to them about like woodworking and things like that. And it's interesting to think that, yeah, Mickey Dolenz has got daughters and, you know, they, he's kind of like got to, you know, vet the guy, you know? So it's kind of interesting, but that was a great Q&A. I think that one might've actually been the best one.
Wow.
Because it was just a lot of fun and they were all just really, really sweet.
Mm-hmm. The Q&As that I went to were very good. I saw Mike's on Friday, which of course was very interesting.
Yeah.
Mickey's, and I missed Andrew Sandoval's. I think I was in line for something, but I got to see Ian Lee's video tribute to Davey. He's collected a whole bunch of videos.
That was great.
Oh, that was one of the highlights. Well, Ian Lee's just a wonderful guy. I got to help him out a little bit with his documentary that he's doing, and hopefully we'll hear more about that at the coming months. And then I also got to go to the expert panel on Sunday, which was interesting as well. So,
that's great.
Yeah.
Now was there any audio or video type presentations that went on?
They showed episodes in the ballroom mm-hmm. during downtime.
Oh, that's cool.
And like Sarah said, Ian Lee did a Davey presentation that was just a bunch of rare Davey videos. Not only Davey, actually. I remember them showing Love Light, Mickey's video. So, yeah, there were... And I believe that they were supposed to show Head on the last day, but they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was only there for Friday and Saturday, so I missed all the Sunday events. But, yeah, I mean, you could always kind of saunter into the ballroom and there would be something going on. I should actually also mention some incredible tribute bands that played throughout the course of the day. And it was just so crazy to walk by. Like, you'd be doing something else. And like I said, you can't see everything, and I regret not being able to see a lot of these tribute bands, but you'd walk by, and you'd hear, like, a full-out tribute band playing, like, the poster.
I feel like I'm already there. I must see her fly through the air.
One, two, three, and...
Do you feel it too? Yeah. And you walk by and you're like, somebody else knows that song.
Yeah.
Like the stuff they pulled out was great.
One of my favorite memories from the weekend, I think it was like Saturday, early evening or something. It was before the Nez solo concert later that night. And I was like getting out of the elevator on the second floor, because there's like the second floor balcony area and then kind of the lobby below it. And everybody was down in the lobby having this big old monkey sing-along. And I walk out the elevator and I think I was going to the vendor room or something. And who should come walking down the hall in the other direction but Mickey with his bodyguard. Uh-huh. So I kind of like slide over to the wall to get out of his way and all that. And he like stops. And he goes and walks over and is like looking over from the balcony over down to all of the fans singing Monkey's songs,
which is awesome.
Yeah, and it's like there was like this 2 or 3 second window before anybody noticed they were up there, and of course they did, and the crowd went nuts, and you know then he went on his way. But it was just, I will never forget watching him watch his fans.
Yeah, I ran into Michael in the vendor room.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And at some point, Mickey was in there with Georgia. I think that all of the Dolan's kids had tables.
Yeah.
Amy was selling books and videos and things like that. Emily had paintings and fine art and things like that. And Georgia was selling the furniture that she does on the website. Charlotte did not have a table, but she kind of hung with the other Dolan's girls. And I have a major crush on her, I got to say. Wow. In person, beautiful. At some point Mickey was behind one of the tables and somebody had bought a picture frame from the Dolan's and Daughters table, and he signed it to them and things like that. So I saw them kind of move in and out of the vendor room a few times. But, of course, you know, they were flanked by security and stuff. But, you know, people were kind of in their face taking pictures, and they were cool with it, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you mentioned Mike did a concert.
He did.
Yes, he did his solo Movies of the Mind show on Saturday night. And that was the third time I'd seen him live in his solo act. And I have to say that was the best one.
It was the second time I saw him, and I hadn't seen him do this set, so I was glad that I didn't see him come around the second time, because that was pretty much the set that he did at the convention.
Yeah. Did he play Cruisin'?
Yes.
Yes.
And the place went nuts.
From the album Infinite Rider on the Big Dogma and the long-form video Elephant Parts, this is a triptych of Cruisin', Dance, and Tune.
Yeah! video of that concert, and you really should check it out. It was the first time he'd ever done a concert, to my knowledge, where he wasn't playing his guitar.
Yeah.
And so it was like he was putting all his energy into the vocals and just whipping the crowd up. And, of course, the crowd was, you know, a room full of 1,000 monkeys and Nez people. And, of course, those diagrams overlap. So, and it was just insane.
Light was awesome.
Yes.
Light was so good.
I've never really liked that song before, but the way he did it that night,
Yeah. I mean, it just brings back memories of Elephant Parts and Television Parts and renting them on VHS when I was a kid. And I haven't revisited those songs a ton of times during the year. So to hear that song again in this kind of setting was just absolutely great. I loved it.
Mm-hmm. Did it come with the price of admission to the convention, or was it a separate ticket?
No, it was a separate ticket.
All right. And were there any other performances from Mickey or Peter?
None from Peter. Mickey joined, I think it's his brother-in-law, has a Van Halen tribute band.
Oh, wow.
I came in towards the end of that one. How was it?
We weren't there for the main part of their set. We happened to walk in as soon as Mickey came on, and I think he did Last Train to Clarksville, I'm Not Your Stepping Stone, and I'm a Believer.
Yeah, I think I came in during Stepping Stone, I recall.
It was decent. It was, you know, it was what you would expect. It was Mickey kind of fronting a different kind of band. But it was interesting to see a Van Halen tribute band playing I'm Not Your Stepping Stone. So it was different. It was, it was a bit of a different vibe. It was cool to see, you know.
I guess we should talk a little bit about the vendor area now. It sounds like there was a lot going on there.
Sarah, you want to kind of kick this off, or...?
Absolutely. One of the big things that was really nifty that happened, I guess it only happened about a month or two prior to the convention, Rhino became an official sponsor of the con, and so they had a very large booth there. And, I actually picked up a few things, a couple of handmade releases that I needed to kind of fill out my collection. But you had a lot of kind of the big collectors in the fandom. Henry Babbitt had a huge booth where he was selling a lot of things. I bought the first draft script of Head from back when it was called Changes. I got a copy of that, so I was happy about that. And I got some other doodads here and there. Fred Velez was there kind of selling some of his things, and he was also selling his new book, which is excellent. A Little Bit Me, A Little Bit You is its title, and it's kind of just a memoir of his time in the fandom. And if you know who Fred Velez is, I mean, he knows everybody and has been to everything. He's been around since the 60s, and it's just a great kind of memoir of life as a Monkees fan. And then my good friend Melanie Mitchell was selling her episode guide to the series Monkey Magic, and there were a lot of people who've guest starred on the show. Eric Lefkowitz was there selling his book. All the Nesmith kids and all the Dolan's kids had booths and were selling their various music and things like that. And it was kind of the place to be, because it's like you'd walk around and you'd run into just everybody eventually. If there wasn't anything else going on, they'd just hang out in the vendor's room. And there were so many cool experiences.
Mm-hmm. By the time I got there, I knew that I was going to end up spending a little more money than I had put aside. And by the time Friday was gone, I had originally gone there having spent in advance the opportunity to get a picture with Michael. Mm-hmm. And by the time Saturday came around, I knew that that was going to change to a picture of the three of them. So my wallet, in terms of what I could get from the vendor room, severely emptied. But I really went there looking for one thing, which was an original Cole Jones copy of Head on vinyl. And only because it's I never like seek these out, but it was the only one that I needed for a full collection of the original 9 stereo LPs. And so I didn't want to grab one on eBay, and all the other ones I kind of found by act. Like I found a Changes in Philly for $7, a Present in Philly for $8, just these record stores that kind of, they came in and they priced them very low, and I happened to be there at the right time. I was at the opposite end of the vendor room, and I find a beautiful copy of Head still in the shrink wrap, not completely sealed, but slit down the right-hand side, but the original shrink wrap still intact. And I think it was like $40 or so, but it was so beautiful looking. And it's hard to find copies of that, that the cover isn't just completely worn or, you know, has vinyl wear. So that was my big purchase. And it turns out that I believe I bought it from Andrew Sandoval's table. And I didn't know that until later on when I walked back in and he was behind that table. Yeah, so that was the one thing that I went there for. And I got little doodads. Actually, the thing that I enjoyed most was probably a set of cookies. One in the shape of a wool hat.
Yes.
And one in the shape of the Monkey's 8-button shirt. And they were quite good. Very tasty. Just what you need before a 2-hour drive home to Philly.
So, Sarah, I know you had mentioned to me at one point when we were talking about a documentary about Boyce and Hart.
Yes, this is something that I guess Rachel Lichtman and Andrew Sandoval have been working on the last few years, really. I've been hearing about it on and off, really, kind of since I got back into the Monkees world in 2012, where basically they have put together a documentary. The version I saw was about an hour and a half long on the career of Boyce and Hart, basically starting from the beginning of their collaboration, kind of going through the Monkees era, but then also into their time as a performing act in their own right, and basically through to the end of the 60s. Most of us who are Monkees fans know a fair bit about Boyce and Hart, at least from that era, but really the story of their collaboration is sort of the story of music in the 60s and how it kind of transformed from that Brill Building model where you were just churning out a bunch of pop songs for whoever to sing to kind of where things were at the end of the decade, which was that singer-songwriter model. And it was just interesting to kind of learn about how, not just how culture changed, but how music and how the way music was made and promoted and marketed just kind of evolved through that decade.
And is this something that is still in, is it completed?
Yeah, they had their premiere at a film festival, I can't remember the name of it, in Chicago. I have not heard anything about it since then. I'm knocking wood that they can get, maybe we can get a DVD release or put it out on Netflix or something like that, because it is just, it's just period one of the best music documentaries I've ever seen.
Wow, that sounds great. It really, you know, my love of the early Monkees catalog, so there's a lot of Boyce and Hart stuff there, so it definitely sounds like an interesting documentary.
It was the one thing that I wish that I would have done there, and the reason I didn't was, again, because things were going on at the times when it was showing, and then the last time they had was just too late for me. I had to kind of get back home because I wasn't staying for Sunday. But they had an Indiegogo campaign to raise money to get rights to some of the music in the film.
Oh, right. I can imagine that's going to be challenging.
Yeah, I don't know that it ended.
It didn't quite hit the goal they had, but I think they were pretty happy with the results.
Okay, good.
The
so
things
they
said on the Facebook page. So.
Great. So they can put some of that towards it. That's great.
Yeah, it's funny with licensing. It seems like it's one of those things. Well, you know, where the license holder can get some money or no money.
Right.
You know, so what would you rather have?
Now, Sarah, I assume that the cut they showed featured all this music, or was it like an early?
Okay. It was basically, they said they needed to like take time stamps out of some clips and things like that, but it was essentially done, and it had all of the music in it, of course, because it was kind of a sneak preview type thing and not, you know, quote, open to the public. But I really hope they were able to get most, if not all, of that music in there, because it was just, I didn't understand how many people Boyce and Hart had written for over the years. I mean, they wrote a song for Chubby Checker. It was a whole new world for me. So
that's great. Yeah, I really wish that I'd had a chance to see that. Hopefully I will.
So now at this point, all we can do is really look forward to 2015. And the good thing there, Craig, is you'll have plenty of money because you won't have to worry about autographs or pictures.
That is true. It was, I want to speak briefly to the autograph thing. It was kind of interesting because nobody knew what the autograph prices were going to be ahead of time.
Yeah, that was a mistake, I think.
Yeah, and I know that several people asked on the Facebook page to the convention, and they said that they had nothing to do with the autograph prices, which I have no reason not to believe. But I think that I think that a lot of people kind of came in not knowing what to expect, and like $100 is a pretty high price for a Nesmith autograph, you know. But I paid it, and I'll do that once, and I had my moment, and I'm happy. So next time I go, I now have my 4 signatures, and I'd met Davey years and years and years ago. Here's actually a funny story that I'll tell you about meeting Mickey at the convention. He was doing a package tour in 1991 with, it was called some kind of rock and roll tour. I can't remember exactly what the name is, but it had Tiny Tim and the Tokens and Jewel Akins and Bobby Boris Pickett and a whole bunch of 60s and 70s acts, you know, and they all did like 4 or 5 songs. And a friend of mine, her stepfather worked for a local radio station, so we had what amounted to like all access passes. I don't know. There must have been something about me at the age of 18, the thought that I could just walk up backstage and approach a Mickey Dolenz. Although it was kind of interesting. At one point, we were just kind of standing backstage, and like this kid throws a ball at me, and I threw it back, and then Mickey comes out of the trailer, and he's, you know, like, "Come on, Emily." And they were Mickey's kids. So it was very strange. It was one of those moments where all of a sudden you're thrown into a very surreal situation. I approached him backstage while he was eating or doing something that I probably shouldn't have approached him during. And he would not respond to me in anything other than like smiles and like facial expressions. It was very odd. And at the time he was working on a solo album, and I think that ended up being Mickey Dolenz Put You to Sleep. But I didn't know that at the time. It was just that he was working on a solo album, and I walked up to him, and he actually had a guitar in his hand, actually. And he was, you know, walking around kind of noodling. And I said, "You have a solo album you're working on." And he gave me a smile and played a chord or two. And I said, probably foolishly, and I meant this with all of the love possible, "Will there be anything on it like Shorty Blackwell?" At which point he gave me a very odd look and just walked away. So at the Monkees convention, I think it was $70 to buy a little miniature Monkees drum head with a logo, and Mickey will sign it and personalize it to you with the name of your favorite song. So as I was standing in line, I was like, he's going to write Shorty Blackwell on this thing and make up for that look that he gave me that day many, many years ago. So I walked up, and he was very, very, very nice. And he, you know, asked what song title I wanted. And I said, "How about Shorty Blackwell?" And he looked up, you know, I could see his eyes, you know, over the shades. And he's like, "That's a really good one." And he jotted Shorty Blackwell on the drum, gave it to me. And I was like, there it is. It's all, the circle has been completed.
Excellent.
So yeah, so that was a good convention moment for me. It was fun.
Oh, that's awesome, Sarah. I know you said you had a lot of friends at the convention. Are there any moments that stand out for you outside of, you know, meeting up with friends?
Okay, then I'll skip the story of my friend who cosplayed as Princess Gwen.
No, please include that. Please include that.
Wow.
I didn't want to dismiss that.
My very good friend Jamie is like a major cosplayer. I mean, she does the Stormtrooper thing and all of this. And she had done, I mean, a spot on, totally accurate to the episode Fairy Tale, Princess Gwen. And she had been roaming around the exhibit room and, of course, got a lot of great feedback from it. Another friend of ours basically talked her into getting a picture with Michael Nesmith in her Princess Gwen getup.
Wow.
And from what I understand from the story, when she walked in the room, he just lit up. He thought it was like the funniest thing he ever saw.
Oh, wow, what a great looking chick.
She's beautiful.
And so she just had a wonderful time and got to do that.
Harold, you better get this carriage out of the mud!
The other thing that I guess I could mention is I got a couple of things signed that weekend, both by Mickey and by Mike. And when I went through Mike's line, I had my Listen to the Band box set, and it had already been signed by Peter back in 90-something. And Mickey, just the previous day. I never got a chance to get Davey to sign it, but I was going to get Mike's signature, and he signed it. And he just kind of looked down and said, "Almost got there." I said, "Yep."
Aww.
Yeah, and so we just kind of little sad smile, but you know, it's like, that's how it goes sometimes. And I was like, yes, it was. So yeah. I wandered off, but it was a wonderful moment. It was just getting to meet so many people who were involved in it, not just my friends, but also people who I'd been, you know, who I knew through the TV through all those many years and listening to their music. And it was a wonderful experience.
Yeah. And you put up quite a few detailed posts surrounding your convention experience over at your website, right?
Yeah, fandomlenses.com. I just about did a blow-by-blow of the whole convention because I knew so many people were not able to go. And, you know, I'm normally the person who's stuck at home five states away who can't go to that sort of thing. So I wanted to do something kind of for the people who weren't able to go. But if you go to fandomlenses.com and then just type in Monkeys Convention 2014, you'll be able to go to that stuff.
Great. Yeah, that'll be a great read for a lot of people after they listen to this segment. So guys, it was really, really excellent to hear about your time at the convention, and I'm very much hoping and looking forward to whatever they do in 2015.
It was a pleasure talking to you about it.
Yeah.
It's good stuff to relive. Can I just throw one last thing in?
Oh, of course, please.
And I remember I made this my Facebook post. I can't remember. It must have been during Michael's Q&A that he ended up doing the princess voice from Fairy
Tale.
Yes.
Help! Help! Here we are stuck in the mud in some filthy little town. Help!
And I immediately grabbed my phone and, you know, and all of my jealous monkeys friends connected to me via Facebook read, Michael Nesmith, so-and-so feet from me, just recited a line from the Fairy Tale in the princess voice.
Yes.
I can leave. My life is now complete. It was a very, very, very cool moment.
Yes, I'm here.
Oh.
I mean, again, for the serious monkey, it's always nice to see Michael go into silliness, and he definitely doesn't shy away from that stuff. It's good to see, and it was also nice to see that he was having a good time with it.
Yeah.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah, it does sound like it was a good time all around. So I think with that, we will end this sort of discussion of the 2014 convention.
Another episode of Zilch. We're going to call it, guys, right?
Yep, right.
Okay, well, we want to thank everyone for listening. Anything in closing?
We'll talk to you next time.
See ya.
See ya.
Cheers.
Bye.
Zilch. Take some time to monkey around.
Here we go. Walking down, the, down street. The street. We get the funniest looks from.
Isn't that dumb?
And that's our show. Zilch is an online nonprofit monkeys audio fanzine made by fans for fans. Any samples of music or interviews heard remain property of their owners. We are not related to the monkeys or any of their members, past or present. We are not affiliated with Rhino or Ray Burke. If you hear anything you like from the band, go on Amazon or iTunes and buy it. If you enjoyed the show, like us on Facebook and rate us on iTunes. Thank you for listening. Until next time, I'm your announcer, Chelsea Epstein, saying always take some time to monkey around.
Help! Help! Here we are stuck in the mud in some filthy little town. Help! Well, if you don't get me out of this filthy little village in 10 minutes, I'm not going to marry you. What do you think of that?
Wow, what a bummer.